Have a seat.
That's Lucy's friend.
Little bad-looking Sheila. Where'd Jack find her?
Okay, I've asked Miss Thomas to join us today because she possesses a very unique ability. Now, for those of you who don't know, Sue is deaf. This is Bobby, Miles, Demetrius.
How you doing?
And Tara. Why don't you tell them all how you communicate?
Just fine, thank you. I think what he's referring to is I read lips. I can sign too, if anyone's interested. You must be from Australia. I saw you use the word Sheila to describe someone.
So hi there, and welcome to Random Access Television, the podcast where we discuss a TV show that's been picked for us at random by our vintage supercomputer that we fed the name of every TV show in existence into. My name is Zach, and alongside me is my co-host Nos. Join us as we watch whatever the computer spit out for us. This time around, it picked the family-friendly crime drama Sue Thomas FBI, spelled E-Y-E, from the early 2000s. Nos, how are you doing?
Hey, Zach, I'm doing pretty good. I'm enjoying, well, I think by the time that we release this, it'll be fall.
Yes.
So I'm enjoying the beautiful fall weather.
Yeah, the East Coast, you're seeing the leaves fall and everything. And
the leaves actually turn colors here, which is bizarre.
It's not 112 degrees right now at all.
No, it's like Halloween and you're not in your swim shorts.
We record this months in advance. Anyways, so it's time for our little history segment. So this one starts a little big picture, but stay with me here. So back in the 1920s, when radio was just starting, there were issues of distribution. How could you get stations all across the country from Maine to San Diego to run the same programming? The solution was to turn them into a network, which is actually a lot more like a computer network than I initially thought until I started doing research. In this case, it meant a physical network of stations connected by coaxial cables, the same one that go into your cable box now. After a bit of sorting out, basically three were created and ended up dominating radio. So tell me if these names sound familiar. There was the Columbia Broadcasting Network, CBS, Columbia Broadcasting System, I'm sorry, the National Broadcasting Company, NBC, and after NBC was forced to sell half of its network due to regulations, the American Broadcasting Company, ABC.
I recognize all of those.
Yeah, they're still in existence today. After World War II, these three companies naturally ended up going into television and dominating there as well. There was another network called the DuMont Network that lasted from 47 to 54, but after it closed its doors, the three companies had a virtual monopoly on television and its millions of daily watchers for the next 30 years. So how does that get to our show this week? Well, eventually, the three networks got some actual competition. There were more and more local stations that would air. So it used back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, it was common for everything but the largest market to only have three, maybe four channels. But eventually, there were six or seven channels, even in medium-sized markets, and they wanted something to show. So somebody was eventually going to break that stranglehold, and it was the Fox Network, which launched in 1986. Uh-huh. But the Fox Network didn't make money for its first 5 years. By the time it was profitable, there were also changes in cable regulation, so it became easier to make a network over the air than it was to make a cable channel. So everybody started flooding the market with new networks. There was about a dozen of them in the 90s. There was the WB, UPN, but also specialty things like QVC, the Home Shopping Channel, Christian Broadcasting Network, Trinity Broadcasting Network, Univision, Telemundo.
The Box?
The Box, yes. Was that the one where you would request the video?
Yeah, it was like, I think it where we grew up, it was Channel 29,
yes.
I think?
Channel 29 out of it was out of Stockton or Modesto. I remember once.
So you would only get it sometimes.
Right.
At least I only got it sometimes.
Same. They showed the Mega Man cartoon, I remember, and I tried to pick that up sometimes, and I had to change the house antenna around, and I could never fully get Channel 29.
RIP box.
Yeah, that was broker, not a network, to be technical. but yes, that sort of thing. You know, if there was a large enough niche, basically there was now an over-the-air network to cater for it by the late 90s. But what if there wasn't? What if there was still a niche to be filled? Well, Bud Paxson, co-founder of the Home Shopping Network, thought there was enough room for another one. He formed the PAX Network, a network that was going to go kind of a middle road between the broadcast networks and the Christian stations. So it would feature mainstream programming that was not explicitly religious, but there was no sex, violence, or language, and if there was anything on what he had, they would cut it out. So they would show edited versions of TV shows. On its launch in 1998, they had a bunch of new unscripted shows, talk shows, game shows. Its flagship shows were It's a Miracle, which was kind of a vaguely religious, unsolved mysteries sort of show, and a reboot show of Candid Camera. That was their big two shows.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Oh, no, I can't believe all these memories that are flooding back to me of the PAX Network.
Yeah, they also started making new versions of Shop Till You Drop and Supermarket Sweep. But they mostly filled themselves out with reruns of old shows like Touched by an Angel, Highway to Heaven, and Dave's World. That was their premier sitcom that they had.
Oh, really?
Actually, oh, that's funny. Now that I know that, that might be one of the reasons why it never really succeeded in reruns, because the PAX Network snapped it up so quickly and it had a pretty small reach. So local stations couldn't play it. That's just me being hypothetical here, but.
Okay, interesting.
So eventually they got kind of ambitious, and in 2002 greenlit 3-hour-long dramas. The Billy Ray Cyrus medical show, Doc, an X-Files ripoff called Mysterious Ways, and our focus for this episode, Sue Thomas, FBI. Mysterious Ways, you're making a weird face.
This is another one of those cases where at a point, I know I've mentioned on the show before, that I didn't own a TV in the early 2000s for a period of time. And I think this may have been that period of time, because these all sound like things that I would have been playing in the background had I had a TV.
Gotcha.
So I have a very weird soft spot in my life for like white people drama. And I don't mean CSI or Law and Order. Those things are not specifically for me, but I mean things like Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman.
Gotcha.
I love that show. And I know that was on PAX at one point.
Yes. They played it ad infinitum. Yeah. It was.
Yeah. So maybe, I don't know, there may have been some point there where I had a TV or had it on in the background. But this show, FBI, is all new to me.
Yeah. It was kind of in a weird way, not in a weird, like kind of like the Hallmark Network before the Hallmark Network was the Hallmark Network.
Right. It was a lot of, I would say, inspirational things.
Right.
Even if it didn't have an overt message of faith, there would usually be mentions of God, of a higher power, something like that.
Spirituality in a vague way. Yeah. So the show was produced by brothers Dave and Gary Johnson, who also produced the show Doc as well. It was based on the 1990 book Silent Night, which is the autobiography of a deaf woman who was named Sue Thomas, who worked for the FBI in the early 80s. At first, she was only doing fingerprint readings, but one day some agents figured out that she could read lips and could be helpful for them, so they started to involve her in field operations. It starred Deanne Bray, who is also deaf, in the title role, playing that exact character. The pilot is basically the book that the I just book, described. Yeah. The first episode, two-parter, premiered on October 13th, 2002. We watched both episodes for this. Nas, what did you think?
Okay, well, this one was really interesting for a variety of reasons. I probably will not be able to cover them all, but let me talk about the first thing, the first and foremost, is she's deaf. Mm-hmm. Like, she is clearly a deaf actor. It's a show about a deaf woman, and that in itself was super fascinating. I mean, we talk so much now about inclusivity and, you know, giving everybody a seat at the table when it comes to media. And this is the first time I have ever seen a deaf character played by a deaf person.
I have seen a few more, but not very many, and never one, only maybe one other as the actual lead of a show. I've seen some supporting cast members and some guests. Marley Matlin, for instance, she's on The West Wing. But yeah, generally there's not. I was trying to do some research on deaf actors before getting into this, and there's really not a lot. There's her on this show, and there's Marley Matlin, who makes a lot of guest appearances, but it never has, to my mind, been a regular on a TV show. Now that I'm saying that, my brain is flashing back to a TV show. She might have had a short-lived one with Mark Harmon. I can picture the TV Guide fall preview picture.
Your memory for that is probably better than mine. I don't remember that whatsoever.
Well, and this would have been maybe when you were like two. So
okay, well, that would probably be why. But yeah, it was really, that part was very fascinating. I'm so used to, I think, like I said, as far as the inclusivity in modern media goes, I think a lot of times we get actors to play things who may not actually be the thing that they are portraying. And this was awesome. This was great. There was a lot to like in this show. With that said, I think that was the longest hour and a half of my life.
See, I started off that way, and we'll get to the full reviews later, but I started off that way, but I found myself getting more and more into it as it went on, but not necessarily in the way that they were hoping, I'll be honest. Just kind of, so this show is so bloody sincere. It's just, it's so earnest. I mean, it's exactly what it wants to be. I'm going to go ahead and play a clip a little earlier than we normally do here, but just so you can get a sense of the dialogue. For Noss, this is the scene where they're in the apartment describing how good friends they are now.
Oh, okay.
Good friends, you remember that one. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have no idea what just happened, but I'm pretty sure it was funny. I love the lines you make up when they turn away the best.
You're the one who wanted to see through my eyes.
I know. It's just, I find all this so interesting. I've never known anybody handicapped. I'm sorry, I didn't...
Lucy, it's okay. I've known for some time that I'm different than many people.
I'm going to be very honest here. I hope you don't mind, but it is a little awkward being with someone that's different than myself, and I hate that it is. It shows how completely isolated my world is.
After a while, you get used to people not knowing what to say or how to act around one of us.
What? You know what? I'm not going to accept it. I'm going to say and do whatever I feel like around you from now on. Frankly, I feel better already having talked about it. Because I think that's what friends should do. Talk openly, honestly, about everything. Deal?
Deal.
So, I mean, as you can hear there, especially through the very, very low-budget, treacly music, characters say exactly who they are.
Right.
Constantly.
Constantly. Constantly. Very expository. Yeah.
I mean, you heard in the intro, it's the where she's introduced to the other FBI members. And that's maybe about 40 minutes in, half an hour in. And that's probably the sixth or seventh time that she's explained to somebody that she's deaf. And I'm not exaggerating.
On top of that, they were the nicest FBI cohort in any show I've ever seen. I mean, I'm used to watching, you know, The X-Files, Hannibal, things like that, where everyone, like, wants everyone else to die. And they're always fighting against everyone else. And everybody here is like, hi, Sue. Welcome to the FBI.
Well, except for the one guy who she revealed she used her lip reading abilities to find out that he was having an affair and told his girlfriend. And he's
but
the only
he
thing
was never mean to her.
Not directly.
Yeah. He was more of like a Scooby-Doo, I'll get those meddling kids.
Yeah, just like, she's not going to be with us this time. And that,
right.
I guess since the show didn't really have like the tough captain saying you're going to turn in your badge, he was about the equivalent of that.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, the plot. Okay, first things first, I meant to actually say this in the beginning of the show for anyone who's like, I have to watch this myself. I was terrified that the dog was going to die. The dog does not die. So everyone, we're all good here. I know. Yes, I'm one of those people like, oh my God, the animal died. No, the dog did not die. The dog lived.
In this so kind of show, there was almost 0% chance that the dog would die. But if it was going to, it would die in this episode.
Exactly. And that's why I was a little worried, because like a big part of the plot centered on them talking about Levi, the dog, who's a seeing ear dog.
Right.
Yeah. Or a hearing ear dog. So a lot of the plot was talking about how Levi was kind of this like rogue dog. Like he wasn't the best behaved. He was kind of rambunctious. So I'm like, oh no, the dog is gonna die. And then they're gonna replace him with like, you know, the dog that she's supposed to have.
No,
but he lives.
That kind of show. Yeah, he is. So. He is actually, they take him to the hospital. He's in a coma for a while. She only wakes up after they give the inspiring speech about how everybody loves can't think of the character's name, even though it's the title of the show.
Sue Thomas.
Sue Thomas. Yeah, so she's there feeling bad for herself, and all of her friends come by and say very, very nice things about her. As a matter of fact, I think I'm going to go and play that clip right here. This are in the hospital. The first male character you hear is kind of her boss. He was wounded in the shootout at Well. And then here you go.
None of this would have happened if it weren't for me.
None of this would have happened if I hadn't recruited you to come and work with us. And if I could have played hockey, none of this would have happened, because I wouldn't have even been in the FBI.
That's not the same, and you know it.
Yes, Sue, it is the same. If I'd let you in on what we were doing, then you wouldn't have had to follow Renko. I hate to burst your bubble, but you are not personally responsible for every little thing that happens in this world, good or bad. I know you've had to prove yourself over and over again. But you know what? You've done it. It's time for you to accept that you are a warm, funny, caring, beautiful person. Every time that you touch someone's life, you make it better. Including mine.
And mine.
And mine.
So yes, the dog lives. Everybody lives. As a matter of fact,
everybody lives. Everybody thrives. There's very little conflict that isn't resolved.
Right. So like one of the subplots is that she drives into Washington, D.C. from rural Ohio, where she's from. And her car breaks down, and it goes across, you know, and this kindly old man, this old right. widow who befriends her, and, you know, she pronounces guacamole very strangely several times in that scene, but that's a random thing, just pulling the clips. You know, and she just, you know, befriends him and cooks him meatloaf and makes him, but there's a hint of a subplot, like this shady gas station across the street is selling bad gas, and this guy is coming in there and threatening him, and I'm like, how are these going to pay off? They don't. They just, he sells the station, and that's it.
There's no conflict. That actually brings me to kind of probably my biggest observation about this show and early 2000 shows in general, for the ones that we've watched. Mm-hmm. And you could tell in the early 2000s, there was a push towards including people in roles that were not typical.
Mm.
Having strong, powerful women in lead roles, especially. Usually will be comedies, sometimes will be dramas. And I think this was a really good example of one of those early 2000s thing in like sort of plot lines in which the woman was, there's this step towards representation, but oftentimes at the expense of some other minorities.
Well, it's funny, as I was looking through, now this has changed in the last 5 to 10 years, but as I was looking through the history of deaf actors on TV, it should really just be the history of deaf actresses between the ages of 20 and 30. Because the only ones that I can find were Marlee Matlin, her, and a woman named Shoshana Stern, who was a semi-regular on Weeds, and Jericho, and they're all attractive blonde ladies in their 20s.
Exactly where I was going with this. And there was a couple of things in this very typical early 2000s humor. They made fun of sushi.
Yeah.
About, really nothing over the top, just Asian people don't know how to cook kind of thing, or they don't know how to cook their food.
I think that was more of a joke towards her because she was unsophisticated, and it was just, why is sushi so expensive? It was like a Jerry Seinfeld joke from 1988.
Right.
They don't cook it, yet it costs more than the fish down the street.
But then the evil gas station guy was clearly Middle Eastern.
Yeah.
Clearly.
And the villains were Russian, which is just the villain du jour of that era.
Exactly. So there was, and even the black best friend trope was very strong in that
she's the only person of color in the entire series, other than there's some sort of FBI guy who's in one scene.
Right.
Is her black best friend, who has almost no personality and becomes instantly a friend with her. I mean, I was kind of surprised, there was interracial dating. That was kind of surprising.
That's true.
Because her boyfriend, the one that was mad at her, was white.
That's true.
But
I think it comes back to, there's that step, but it's something that happens even now. It's one marginalized group is lifted up at the expense of others.
Right.
And I we're getting better about it, but seeing this in with a dated lens, it seems particularly egregious to me.
Yeah. And there's also, I think in this particular case, there's a lot of budgetary issues involved.
Mm-hmm.
This show was very clearly filmed in Canada.
Yeah.
My Canadian radar was up at the first shot, and then she's driving past this little country road and the sign says 70. I'm like, because that's kilometers. You wouldn't be able to drive 70 miles an hour on that little road. And then they show an ad for Smarties, a candy that doesn't exist in the States. And it takes place in Washington, D.C., but let's just say that the extras do not represent the diversity of Washington, D.C. or anything resembling it. And get a little bit into the review section a little bit early, but it was just so clunky. It had a just like everybody who now criticizes media later on. Mm-hmm. I went to film school, at least briefly. I took some film classes, and it just kind of has the feel of, well, this is what I'm supposed to do. This is how this shot is set up. This is how these extras are supposed to go through. There's a really hilarious scene. I'm going to go ahead and play a little bit of it because it's them flirting. And it's one of the goofiest, most earnest flirting scenes I've ever seen. It actually has the sushi conversation we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go ahead and play that here.
Another thing that always amazes me is that the less they have to do to prepare your food, the more they charge you for it.
You have a very common sense way of looking at things.
I was raised to be very practical. Good Midwestern values, you know?
Yeah, I know. I'm from Wisconsin.
City boy or country boy?
Small town.
And yet you like raw fish.
Well, my dad fed me sardines when I was a kid, so I guess sushi's a natural extension.
How did you end up with the FBI?
Well, I was always fascinated by it, but I guess I became a little more interested when I realized that I wasn't going to make a living playing professional hockey. Saddest day of my life.
And that was when?
I was 10. I was lousy.
And during that entire conversation, as they're slowly walking down, because they like to do a lot of walk and talks, even though she has to look at them, so they're walking very slowly,
right.
There's these... Every extra is, like, bottlenecked behind them and panically looking at the director, like, do I go past them? Do I keep going? And
right,
there's just... It had a very amateur feel to it. I looked up the director and the producers of this, and the funny thing, they had barely done anything before this. Then they got both major PAX shows, and then after those go off the air, almost nothing.
Interesting.
Like, I just don't know what happened. Like, they wrote, like, a Hallmark Christmas movie in 2013, and that's it. They just disappeared, and I can kind of see why. I mean, not to... throw shade on people. They directed more episodes of television than I did, but at the same time, there was just a clunkiness to it that was...
Yeah, that's why I'm struggling, because they're actually... See, the funny thing about this is, like I was telling Zach, I think, when I was watching it last week, I actually ended up watching another episode than the ones... Like, I just let the thing run, like, mm-hmm. I was cleaning my room and I just let it run. I didn't dislike it. It was entertaining. I was invested.
Yeah.
But with that said, there was nothing revolutionary.
No.
There was no other than the main character, nothing about it was super memorable. It was very awkward in places. It was almost like, not, I wouldn't call it cringe, but just awkward.
Yeah, amateur.
It had
at points like somebody putting on a play, community theater. Some of the bit players weren't very good. The guy with the Australian accent was terrible. There's a guy with an Australian accent in there who, by the way, I looked him up. He's from Detroit. As far as I know, he's never even been to Australia. And
they just had an Australian accent.
Well, you know, it's possible, actually, that I'm looking at it. I was looking at the book. Some of the names of the characters in the show were real people in real life that she interacted with. So maybe she happened to have an Australian person and they just thought, okay, we'll get the best Australian person that we can find in Vancouver or Ontario or wherever they filmed it. And that's the best one they could find.
Yeah, I guess it's possible. I mean... And there was things about it that were reminiscent. I was a little, like, it was a little similar to, like, House in certain ways. Obviously not with the depth or vigor of House, but just, like, the multi-professional cast everybody's got their little backstory.
Yeah, it had the room of people typing on the computers maybe a year or two before that really became big, CSI made it so that everybody has it, and they even joke about it now in the Spider-Man movies. You know, I want to be the guy with the headset. You know, they had some... bland-looking Canadian woman with a headset that was their hacker or whatever, enhancing the picture so she could read the lips.
Right.
It's just also funny, like, it was kind of nice to see in one way, though. There was no murder on the show. There was no killing at all. Like, even there was a gunfight with these Russian jewel thieves, and as far as I know, nobody died.
That's true, because when they shoot the officer and the dog, there's like a bang, but they don't actually show like the person going down and like the dog like going down, but they don't show any
even the Russian guys, they didn't like kill the there was like four or five like Russian tough guys, and they were they surrendered.
It was just very comic booky.
I looked ahead. I kind of scanned the episode guide. There's 56 episodes in total, and the word murder or kill only appears in five of them.
Interesting.
It's just mostly like
FBI, like
it's jewel thieves and corporate crime, and you know, things like that. It looked like there was a serial killer episode one episode only, you know.
Oh wow, that's interesting.
Because it was a network that was just trying to keep things kind of gentle, and I kind of appreciate that, even if it didn't quite work out. This is really the sort of show that I wish there were more of, and I wish they were better. It's the kind of show, like, in the 80s and 90s, and they showed a lot of these, the PAX Network did. Things like Highway to Heaven, The Waltons, Little House on the Prairie. they did the family thing, but they also, they did them well. I think when there's kind of this niche kind of Hallmark thing, when you know that you have a certain built-in audience, you don't have to try that hard.
Right. Right. Yeah. It was, I think it's just, it's very aware of the fact that you and your family could sit down for dinner in front of the TV. Nothing too objectionable will happen. Maybe if there's a particularly sad storyline, you might shed a single tear.
Yeah. I mean, I was watching this and my 5 and 3-year-olds came in the room and I didn't turn it off because there was no reason to.
There was no, there's no objectionable content. There's no,
there's more vulgar stuff on Disney Channel now.
I mean, absolutely. Absolutely. So yeah, it's, I would say that, I mean, I don't know where quote like Christian TV is at this point. I don't know if there's even a network devoted to it in the same way.
There are. The problem is now that everything has become kind of niche. Mm-hmm. It's, there's very few that are trying to be anything other than preaching to the converted. So there are some dramas I've seen. I try to watch a little bit of everything. There are some dramas. BYU makes a good couple of dramas where it's it's a show that doesn't particularly preachy about it, but you know, is and it isn't. But a lot of times, it's, they don't even bother with the drama anymore or a comedy because it's much easier and cheaper, and probably would get higher ratings to just show a televangelist or show you know a little children's show or something. It's, they've basically given up on trying to convert anybody,
right?
Or make a mass appeal sort of Christian-y show like a Highway to Heaven or something.
Yeah, I remember like when I was growing up, Seventh Heaven was like
Seventh Heaven, big and one. Touched by an Angel. They were running at roughly the same time. I haven't seen much stuff like that lately, and what I have doesn't come out. It's not successful even on its own. Things, it's not worth them to produce it with the money, even if it's a good show.
Maybe just Hallmark filled the niche.
I think it really did. I think the people who wanted this sort of content without the Jesus watch Hallmark, and the people who just wanted the Jesus now just go full Jesus. So
okay, interesting. Yeah.
It's the nicheification of everything. I mean, there's very few shows for the quote unquote whole family anymore. Period.
Very true. Very true.
Everybody's trying to get that little slice. Like, I only want teenage girl. I only want girls 12 to 16. So let's, before we get to our final grade, just a little bit more history. So Sue Thomas FBI was the PAX Network's flagship show after it aired, easily its biggest hit. But it wasn't enough of a hit for the network to keep making it or any other shows at all. Sue Thomas, along with Doc and all of the network other shows, shut down production in the spring of 2005 when the network decided to become a rerun-only channel. So Sue Thomas ended with 3 seasons and 56 episodes on May 22nd, 2005. Weeks later, the PAX network would rebrand itself as Independent Television. It got rid of the 50s and 60s old sitcom reruns. Like, they were showing Green Acres, and then they replaced it with more modern stuff, like Diagnosis Murder, but also infomercials. While it was Independent Television, 2/3 of its daily schedule was infomercials.
Interesting. Okay. Right.
But this, too, failed as a business. So, 2007, 2 years later, it relaunched as ION, the name it still has today.
Yeah, it's still the crime channel.
The crime channel. Yeah, it's exactly. On today, as a matter of fact, if instead of, they just went with just mainstream reruns, basically.
Yeah.
Today, they were running a 12-hour Chicago PD marathon. Tomorrow, it is a 12-hour Hawaii Five-0 marathon, followed by a 12-hour NCIS, and so on and so forth.
Right.
So they've obviously abandoned their whole family-friendly thing and are just showing off network reruns now. And that's it for the PAX Network and me blathering about fourth TV channel. So
that's really I think that was, again, I have learned so much this this episode. I was wondering, I was, because I have many memories of my family, you know, every say Saturday night we'd watch like Dr. Quinn, Walker, Texas Ranger, you know, mm-hmm. those, like that block of TV, and we'd all sit down and watch it for a couple of hours. And for the most part, something like that just doesn't exist anymore.
It really doesn't. Even Netflix, who tries to do every single niche, doesn't really produce anything like Mm-mm. that anymore. Mm-hmm. There was a sitcom I started watching lately called The Big Show Show. The Big mm-hmm. Show is a wrestler. And I was like watching it, I'm like, wow, this is the first like family show I've seen in a long time. Like, it's actually like meant to be watched by everybody from 6 to 60. And of course, it lasted 11 episodes and was canceled because not enough people were watching it. It just doesn't have that niche anymore.
Right,
we're long past the monoculture. And PAX was frankly kind of created a little bit afterwards.
It was dragged, you know, it kind of dragged a little bit there. I mean, I guess when everyone, you know, even when the smallest baby has their own device, they can watch whatever they want.
Yeah, it 2002, it was launched. It was actually 2 years after TV viewing peaked, live TV viewing peaked in 2000. Matter of fact, the summer of 2000 was when it kind of peaked. So that first season of Survivor, that was the peak of the monoculture. So there you go. If you're
American
ever
Idol,
for that was a few years later. It was the
Was it really? Mm-hmm. I thought it was 2000.
No, it was 2002 or 3. It was after 9/11. I remember.
It was after 9/11. You're right. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Very so, interesting. Yeah. ER and Who Wants to Be a Millionaire and Survivor. Those were the last three like gigantic hits.
Okay. Yeah.
So final grades here. I'll go first. I'm going to give this kind of like a C because it's okay. It's just not for me. And
I would say that this one was so difficult for me because I liked a lot of it. And I love that a deaf actor got her, you know, time in the spotlight. So that on that, I would give that a B. The show itself, like a C plus.
Yeah, she still works. She hasn't worked in a few years, but she was on an episode of Veep in 2017. That's her last IMDb credit.
Oh, okay. I remembered that. Well, good. I'm glad she's still getting work.
She had a reoccurring role on The L Word and a couple of other shows. So,
okay, good.
But just,
good.
There was actually a TV show with a deaf actor in its main cast, but in a kind of a 2000s way, and this kind of goes for your
your diversity.
Yeah, your diversity but not diversity thing. He is actually an actor with CP, so he was deaf and mute and could speak only through a computer. It was the fantastic sitcom Speechless that ran on ABC for four or five seasons a couple of years ago. That was a great show, but you know, he's I believe the only, as far as I know, deaf actor that has had a headline show about him as the main character. So
put more disabled people in roles. They deserve it.
Yeah.
Come on, executives. Listen to us.
Yeah, Ryan Murphy does. I hate his shows, but I love that he does that.
Yeah, it's true. Sure,
That's wrong. I watch 9-1-1, but I hate everything else he does. Anyways. So it's time to fire up our computer, our vintage 1950s supercomputer, get those cards in the right order, make sure that all the switches are switched, all the vacuum tubes are in their correct position. Here it goes. Oh, all right, we're going to late 80s cable, specifically the Discovery Channel series Wings.
Okay.
Episodes of which are on YouTube. So the ones we're going to watch are going to be in our Random Access Television YouTube playlist.
Okay.
You can see them there, and we'll see you next time.
Bye-bye. What is Wings? Thanks for tuning into this episode of Random Access Television, and if you haven't already, please remember to subscribe to us on Apple and Spotify podcasts. We also love to read reviews, so go ahead and leave us one. You can find us at RATVPod, that's RATVPOD at twitter.com. And if you have questions, complaints, compliments, recipes, email us at RATVPod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Bye-bye.
That's good soup.